Chapter 10. General? Smythe strode into the conference room, his hair damp. He had been running a hand-to-hand combat training exercise in one of Valkyrie's cargo bays. If you think that kind of training seems redundant when ground combat involves using powered armor, you are wrong. Off-world, we never know who our next enemy will be and what capabilities they bring to the fight. Hand-to-hand combat might actually be hand-to-claw or hand-to-tentacle. Our people need to be ready for anything. Yes, 99% of the action a star operator sees involves both sides using standoff weapons, so the opposing sides never get close enough to tangle face-to-face. Which reminds me, how come in movies monsters and zombies never use standoff weapons? Sure, zombies are frightening, but imagine if they could shoot back at the heroes. Scary stuff. Same with monsters. They always have to get close enough to use claws or fangs or whatever. In horror movies, crazed serial killers use axes or chainsaws instead of a rifle. Even a shotgun would give a monster, zombie, crazed serial killer a decent separation from the target, but no! I guess if zombies could use a rifle, it would make for a very short movie. Anyway, what was I saying? Oh, right. Hand-to-hand combat training is good for fitness and reflexes and eye-hand coordination, and useful in case your powered armor runs out of power. Smythe responded to my call so quickly, I knew he didn't have time for a shower. He must have just wiped off the sweat with a towel before donning a uniform. His blouse was stuck to his back, which was a breach of protocol that probably irritated him. I didn't care. Smythe, we just got a request from the Verd commander down there. I checked my notes. General Tozarkadan for Star Team Alpha to go dirtside again. Technically, Tozarkadan's rank in the Verd Armed Forces was Sorvadaz, which very roughly translated to one step above my grade. That did not mean he could give orders to me. Sir? He stared at me. I thought we were disengaging, letting the Verds handle the mopping up. The X-Force battalion was supposed to be pulling back inside the wire. That was the plan, I agreed. The Verds are pushing forward with their Hearts and Minds campaign. I snorted. More like a cash and greed campaign. The Verdcrisp plan was to get influential merchant caste leaders to buy into the planet's recent change of management by showing how profitable the New World Order could be for them. Off the top, the merchants would no longer be paying exorbitant tribute to whatever warrior caste clan was in control of the local territory at the moment. They would also not have to worry about their residential compounds, manufacturing facilities and warehouses being bombed on a regular basis as collateral damage in the ongoing, endless, and utterly pointless fighting between warrior caste clans. Smythe smiled at my little joke. I trust ST Alpha will not be protecting merchant convoys from bandits. He was joking, but not completely, because he looked me straight in the eye to let me know convoy duty would be a bad idea. The politics of the relationship between us and the Verds was complicated and fluid, meaning we were both seeing how far we could push each other. The Verds were not going to push us into doing grunt work for them. Not on my watch. My authority was technically limited to Task Force Black, the special mission group. But I was the senior human in system, and General Tozarkadan had to at least take my counsel under advisement. No guarding caravans across the desert. The Verds want your team as a rapid reaction force. He lifted an eyebrow. Deploying a star team as a rapid reaction force in a low-intensity conflict is rather like using a sledgehammer to kill a fly. Yes, I agreed. The Verd leadership said something like that when I told them I was approving Tozarkadan's request. I told them that is the freaking point. Too many warrior caste assholes down there haven't gotten the memo that they aren't in charge anymore. The Verds are trying to be diplomatic about it. They expected the warrior caste to act out their death before dishonor ethos bullshit. It is their code, sir, he reminded me. Well, I don't have a problem with warrior caste lizards preferring death to dishonor. I do have a problem that their idea of honor requires them to keep their fellow lizards as slaves, so screw them. Am I making myself clear? Perfectly, sir. As far as I'm concerned, their supposed honor is nothing but cosplay. I want your team geared up and ready to drop in 3 hours. Set up 2 rapid reaction units and coordinate with Tozarkadan. He nodded. Will our rules of engagement be determined by the Verds? No. If the Verds want our help, It's on our terms. The Verds emphasized to me that any use of force must be limited in scope, carefully controlled, and proportionate to the provocation. Screw that. All that proportionate response shit will accomplish is getting the warrior cast to accept our retaliation as a cost of doing business. Smythe, I want you to send a very clear message. This is not business as usual. This is not a feud between clans where they assassinate one of ours so we will kill one of theirs. Whatever use of force you think is appropriate, double it. He gave me another raised eyebrow. I'm serious. Do not screw around with the damn lizards down there. Colonel Mame would love to get live fire practice with Valkyrie's railguns. They are available at your call. Yes, sir. He did not appear entirely convinced. Smythe, I took a breath and softened my tone. I do not want to be here a minute longer than we have to. We have other shit to do. Being here is a detour we can't afford. As soon as the Dutchman confirms there isn't another group of Theranan ships out there, we are out of here. And I do not want the Navy getting called back to this rock because the Verds bit off more than they can chew. End, I jabbed a finger on the table. The fight down there. We used to be terrified of getting into a fight with the Kristang. Those days are over. They are the minor leagues to us now. We aren't wasting our time fighting the freaking Cub Scouts. I happily mixed metaphors. Understood. If the Verds object to our tactics? He said if, but he knew it would be when. First, tell them to go F themselves. Do it politely, I added with a grin. Then, tell them to call me. Sir, am I correct that you intend to send a message to the Verd Chris as much as to the warrior caste? Damn right. Their grand plan here is to reach a compromise with the warrior caste. Admiral Zhao and I agreed that is a losing strategy, and we didn't commit the X-Force here to support political experiments. The Verds need the warrior caste to have a functioning organization, and those assholes know it. So they're going to keep hitting until they find where the limit is. We do not need any of the warrior caste alive when we jump out of orbit. The Verds need to understand that if they want to risk lives for this grand experiment of theirs, they will not be human lives. The Verds need to sink or swim? I was going to say swim, or float on the bloated corpses of their enemies. That is certainly a vivid metaphor, sir. I got a bunch of them. Good hunting down there, Smythe. Part of my important leadership duties involved important stuff like wandering around the ship, being approachable, listening to my people, and showing them that I care. I care so much that I make sure Skippy gives everyone a heads up when I am wandering around to avoid surprising anyone. That is a common courtesy I wished officers had observed when I was a grunt, instead of popping up unannounced while I had all of my gear in a pile on my freaking bunk in the barracks. Giving the crew a heads up was also for my benefit. I did not want a repeat of the incident when I had stumbled upon an amorous couple, coupling, in one of the access crawl spaces back in the engineering section. A heads up to the crew also gives certain people time to conceal the illegal still they think I don't know about. No, Skippy didn't rat out our crew of moonshiners. I figured it out by myself. Every deployment I've been on, someone is making illegal hooch. Starships are no exception. Skippy did have orders from me to report if anyone took it too far, but so far we didn't have a single incident of someone being drunk or even severely hungover on duty. Anyway, I was wandering around the ship and was about to take a left turn toward the bow of the ship when Skippy pinged me. Joe, there is a group of people in the portside ventral railgun magazine if you're interested. Huh? Why is anyone there? The magazines were automated, and maintenance was almost entirely performed by bots. We were trying to change that, getting our crew involved in, or at least knowledgeable about, keeping Valkyrie's complex systems operational.
You'll see, he said with a verbal smirk.
Damn, I had to see what was going on. Our weapons officer, Colonel Mame, was in the cramped space that housed the rotary drum which loaded railgun rounds into the launch tube. There were three drums lined up back to back. Each held a different type of round to be selected based on the impact desired. Most were anti-ship penetrators, the type we most often fired without a lot of success. In space combat, by the time a railgun round reached the designated point it was aimed at, the enemy ship had usually moved out of the way. That's why the ship was equipped with rotary drums, for rapidly firing round after round in a spread pattern. Even so, railguns were mostly useful after some other weapon had damaged an enemy ship, so it couldn't dodge darts. Or, when we jumped in close for a surprise attack, and the awesome precision of Skippy allowed us to aim the railguns before the jump, punching rounds through an unsuspecting target. Weps? I nodded to Mamay. Sir? He didn't stand up or attempt to salute, since we dispensed with that sort of thing aboard the ship. It also would have been awkward as he was on the deck under a drum, one hand reaching in between the stacked rounds. Inspecting the ordnance, I guessed. No, he grinned and wriggled out from the confined space. He had a Sharpie marker in one hand. We're boosting morale. Huh? He pointed to the drum and I ducked down to see. Ha! I gave him a thumbs up. Good one. With the Sharpie, he had written, as per my last email, on the round. Not on the round itself. Even a thin layer of ink might throw off the balance of the ultra-dense material. The penetrators themselves could not even be seen. They were encased in a layer of hard ceramic, or something like that. The ceramic-coated round was encased in a much wider sabot that was about a meter in diameter, with magnets ringing the sabot. I should explain that sabot is a sort of collar that cradles a round, allowing a small-diameter round to be fired from a large-bore barrel like a railgun cannon. The base of the sabot doesn't need to have a driving band that deforms and forms a seal behind the round, because railguns don't use chemical propellants. The magnets on the sabot are there to interact with the magnetic fields in the railgun, scooting the thing along until the round leaves the barrel and the now useless sabot is discarded. Anyway, I saw his gunnery team had decorated the sabot casings of other rounds with heartwarming sentiments like, "Greetings from Earth, MFers," or, "We have been trying to reach you about your vehicle warranty." Mamay held out the Sharpie. Would you like to? Oh, hell yes. I took the marker, moved to the next drum, and stood on tiptoes to write in big block letters, "Diplomacy." Mamay cocked his head, puzzled. That, I explained, is my kind of diplomacy. Busted. It was Star Team Alpha's turn in the galley that day, but most of them were down on Globacus, serving as a rapid reaction force to keep pesky lizards from causing problems. Smythe had not exactly followed my instructions, in that he used a lot more restraint than I expected. But the lizards got the message anyway. After a particularly nasty group of warrior caste assholes slaughtered the inhabitants of a merchant's residential compound, they fled to the compound of another merchant, holing up there and threatening to kill their hostages. Smythe contacted Mamay, and the next time Valkyrie's orbit took us over the compound, it was obliterated with a railgun strike. Sadly, no, I do not know whether that ground attack railgun round had an inspirational message written on it. When the Verd Chris called me, screaming about our admirably rapid but grossly disproportionate response, I pointed out that one, the merchant who supposedly was a hostage had in fact hired the warrior caste thugs to attack his rival. Two, Skippy had intercepted communications to prove that many of the merchants, instead of cooperating with the Verds, were using the chaos on Globacus to settle old scores and gain an advantage in the new order on their world. Three, we had warned the Verds that this was going on, but they had ignored us because humans could not possibly understand the complexities of Kristang societal interactions. And four, I would be very happy to pull ST Alpha off the surface any time the Verds decided their presence was more harmful than helpful. The local Verdcris leadership considered the points I had made, then told me they would file the incident under unfortunate miscommunication and forget about it. That incident convinced me that the Special Mission Group's proper role was not hanging around backwater planets resolving local disputes. I informed Duchamp and the Verds that I was pulling Star Team Alpha off the surface and we would be jumping away in 2 days and a wake-up. With the Star Team unable to take a shift in the galley that day, Sims adjusted the schedule, and the dinner was simple, which was okay by me. That's why I got busted with a plate full of cheeseburger and fries when Sims walked in before I expected her. She didn't glare at me. What she did was worse. She just shook her head and looked disappointed. I know, I sighed, anticipating a lecture from her. I need to eat like a rabbit or something. No, sir. Sims's jaw set in that way she did when she was being extra patient with me. You can simply make some better food choices. Like, instead of French fries with your cheeseburger, substitute carrot sticks. You can dip the carrot sticks in ranch dressing if that's better. How about blue cheese dressing? You know, like when you get celery sticks with your buffalo wings? As I said it, I thought that maybe she had never eaten buffalo wings, and I felt inconsolably sad for her. Blue cheese. She held up her hands. There are better choices, but yes, if that gets you away from eating greasy fries. Okay. I said okay and not I promise never to eat French fries because I am not an idiot. It is best to be vague about promises like that so you can duck out of it later. Anything else? Instead of a cheeseburger, you could have a grilled chicken sandwich. She pointed at another option in the chow line. I could, I agreed slowly. Can I have a slice of cheese and Frank's hot sauce on the chicken? If that gets you to skip the cheeseburger, sure. What about bacon? No, but... I blinked at her, unable to process what I just heard. I love bacon. Bacon does not love you back. I have a hard time believing that bacon would lie to me. Come on, it's bacon. It loves us and wants us to be happy. She rolled her eyes. How about substituting turkey bacon? How about if I soak pieces of cardboard in lard, fry them up, and eat that, I suggested. That would be better than turkey bacon. Hey, what if I eat that fakin' stuff the Ruhar make? That is still bacon. It's just grown in a vat. It is filled with fat and salt and cholesterol. That's why it's filled with goodness. No bacon. No bacon? Well, I have a bad feeling about this, but what else? Instead of butter, substitute despair? No. I made her laugh just a little bit. How about I substitute curling up in a corner and slowly losing my will to live, because that's my option if I can't have butter? You could use less butter, she said, crossing her arms and no longer laughing. Less butter than I really want to use, or less than I am using now? How about you start small, like, instead of slathering bread with butter, you dip the bread in olive oil. Can it be garlic bread? No, garlic bread is slathered with butter. Right, but I didn't put the butter on. That is not the point. You can't even see the butter on garlic bread. She just stared at me. You said I should make better choices. I didn't decide to use butter to make garlic bread. I only decided it is delicious. Hey, it's not my fault at all. My traitorous taste buds are making all kinds of bad choices. If they are traitors, why do you listen to them? Hey, okay, it is not fair for you to use logic and facts like that. She held out her hands. With a sigh, I gave my tray to her and walked back to the end of the line. When I had a plate full of grilled chicken sandwich, one slice of cheese, and a pile of carrot sticks and celery, I walked over to the table where she was sitting with her back to me. Hey, I protested. You're eating my cheeseburger and fries. It's, she mumbled, her mouth full and ketchup running down her chin. Delicious. Plopping down in the seat, I stared at her. Why do you get to... Because I made other choices today that were good. Oatmeal for breakfast, a fruit smoothie for lunch. What did you have for breakfast and lunch, sir? Frosted flakes, I think. With? There might have been a cinnamon roll. She arched an eyebrow at me. Or two, I admitted. Your lunch was a fluffernutter with potato chips. The chips were not in the fluffernutter. I'm not a barbarian. Okay. I picked up a miserable carrot stick, dipped it in the small pool of ranch dressing on my plate, and bit into it. I will try to make better food choices. That's all I ask. Great. If I eat this, I poked the tasteless-looking chicken with a finger. Can I have ice cream for dessert? It would be better if you had a bowl of fruit, sir. What about strawberry ice cream? That has fruit, right? I did not have ice cream that night. That Sims knows about, if you know what I mean.
With the operation on Globacus wrapped up, that's not true. There was plenty of fighting still going on down there, so nothing was wrapped up, except for our participation in the mess. The Verge could handle the situation, or they couldn't. But the Special Mission Group was putting that miserable planet in our rearview mirror, hopefully forever. While we prepared to leave orbit, and the destroyer Boston was conducting minor repairs, I was giving Captain Bonsu a tour of our mighty battlecruiser. "General," he said as we walked forward from one of the missile magazines, "this may seem like an odd question." "Bonsu, out here, there are no odd questions." Derek nodded. He glanced around to see if anyone else was close enough to listen. "Do your weapons talk to you?" "Oh, I ask because you're going to think I'm crazy." "No, not at all. Out here we have met the missiles Todd the Destroyer and most recently Marty the Bringer of Doom." "Todd and Marty? I think Skippy suggests their names." "That explains a lot. I'm glad the missile I used didn't insist on being called Kevin the Punisher." I looked around and lowered my voice. "Don't give the other missiles any ideas, okay?" "I won't." "Did you have any problems with Kevin? "No. It worked perfectly. It just surprised me that weapons have a personality. It takes a while to get used to it. Was this Kevin part of that missile cluster you planted?" "That was a great move, by the way." "He was. Thank you, sir." "You gonna be all right here on your own?" He nodded. "Unless a top-tier client species like the Theranon decide to crash the party, we can handle it." "I think that's unlikely. The little green MFers here hadn't gotten the memo before they attacked you. Most of the Maxalt's coalition have more important things to worry about right now. The Verdcris are a low priority." "I hope you're right about that, sir." "Haven't you heard?" I grinned. "The war is over. We have nothing to fear."